Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. Little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you'd like to become a Patreon donor yourself, please go to the website bodybuildinglegendshow.com and you'll see the Patreon link in the upper right-hand corner. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen, and Happy New Year. Today is the first day of 2023, so Happy New Year, everybody. And today's show, we are going to have part two of our interview with Jerry Branum, where we talk about the year 1972 in review. So we are going back 50 years in time. And last week on the program, we had part one of our interview with Jerry, where we talked about the AAU Mr. America in 1972, won by Steve Mihalik. And we also talked about the 1972 NAVA Mr. Universe, which was won in the professional division by Frank Zane, and in the amateur division by Elias Petsis from South Africa. So this episode of the show, in part two of 1972, we are going to talk about the IFBB shows. So, of course, the Mr. Olympia that year, which was held in Essen, Germany, and that was kind of a controversial Mr. Olympia because a lot of people thought Sergio Oliva should have beat Arnold, but Arnold won his third Mr. Olympia, so we're going to talk about that for sure. And we're also going to talk about the other IFBB shows, including the Mr. Universe, which was held in Baghdad, Iraq. And that was won by Ed Corney. And it was also one of the subjects of the book Pumping Iron, where Charles Gaines and George Butler went with Ed Corney and Mike Katz over to Iraq. And they covered the competition. And that's a big part of the book. In fact, Ed Corney's picture on the cover of Pumping Iron is from him winning the Mr. Universe that year in 1972. And we're also going to talk about the 1972 Mr. America and Mr. World contest, which was also an IFBB contest. And that's where they picked the team that went over to the Mr. Universe. So Ed Corney won the Mr. America that year. And Mike Katz won the Mr. World, and he beat Ken Waller, one of the few times that Mike Katz beat Ken Waller in a competition. So that was a little controversial, too. But Mike and Ed went over, and Ken Waller was supposed to join them on the team. But I believe Ken had an injury that prevented him from going to Baghdad to compete in the Mr. Universe that year. So we are going to talk about all of that in our interview with Jerry in a minute. And it's good talking to Jerry again. We haven't had him on the show for a while. So I was looking back over the list of guests we had in 2022. Can't believe we're going into 2023 already. So this was our fifth anniversary of the show. We started the show on July 4th, 2017. So looking back at over some of our guests, we started the year off last year doing our review show like we're doing now. We did 1971, 1981, 1991. And in between that, we had a tribute for Chris Dickerson, who passed away around December 23rd, I believe. It was right before Christmas. So we had a tribute show for Chris, and we did that with Boyer Co. and Roy Callender and Bill Nealon. And then I had a really good interview with Charles Gaines. That was, I think, one of the highlights of the year for me. John Citroni joined us on the show again. John is always looking good in his 70s. He's amazing shape. And then I got to talk to David Hawk, who was a great pro bodybuilder in the 1980s. And I actually competed with David at the Teenage Mr. America back in 1982. And then we had another roundtable interview with Phil Williams, Tony Pearson, and Tom Terwilliger. So that was really a good show. I brought in Eddie Robinson and Franco Santoriello, who were bitter rivals in the 1980s. They competed against each other many times as teenagers, and also in the 1989 MPC USA, which Eddie Robinson won. He turned pro, and Franco was a great bodybuilder. So that was great bringing those guys together. That's one of the great things about using Zoom now, is that we can bring a couple of guests in at one time. And then Eddie Giuliani passed away in the spring. So we had Lee Haney, Rich Gaspari, and Samir Venut all on the same show to talk about Eddie Giuliani. We had Roger Schwab on the show to talk about magazine articles that he had written. So that was a pretty interesting show that we did also. I always love talking to Roger because I used to read his articles when I was younger, and he's a real gentleman. and he's always great to have on the show. And then brought it together some other friends, Jeff King and Matt Dufresne. Now, Jeff was, of course, the 1983 Mr. America, Mr. Universe winner, and Matt won the same Mr. America, Mr. Universe in 1989. And Matt used to watch Jeff when he was a kid training in the gym, and that's where he got his inspiration. So it was great to talk to both of those guys. We had Stoney Lee Grimes on the show. That was Lee Labrada's training partner, and he was a top competitor in the MPC himself in the 1980s. I had Joe Nazario on the show. Joe was a Mr. International winner, I believe, from 1978, and he competed a lot in the IFBB. John Defendis was back on the show. We had John on before, but I was bringing John back on to talk about his 1988 Mr. USA win. And then we had our fifth anniversary show over the summer, where we had some clips from some previous shows. I brought Wayne Galash back on the show. I haven't talked to Wayne in a long time. So we talked to Wayne about his career, and we talked about some pivotal contests like the 1971 NAVA Mr. Universe that Bill Pearl won, and of course, the 1971 Mr. Olympia. And Wayne was at both of those shows. He was in London for the Universe, and then he flew over to Paris 1 week later, and he watched the Mr. Olympia contest where Sergio was guest posing and was not allowed to compete. And then I had some friends from Chicago on the show, Dave DeYoung, who owned a Quads gym, still owns Quads gym, one of the biggest and most successful gyms in the Chicago area. A lot of great bodybuilders trained there over the last 40 years. And I had his friend, Larry Bernstein, who, of course, was a great bodybuilder in his own right. Larry won the short class at the Mr. America that Jeff King won in 1983. Larry was a great bodybuilder, so I had those guys on. That was a fun show. I had Tom Muscolino on. Tom was another bodybuilder from Chicago that I knew. Tom competed in the Teenage Mr. America contest, I believe, in 1969, and he took second place. So he's had a long history of training at the Duncan YMCA with Sergio, and he got to see a lot of things. And then, unfortunately, Bill Pearl passed away last year, of course, in 2022. And Bill died right before his 92nd birthday. So we had a Bill Pearl tribute, of course. We had to give him a tribute. And we brought Boyer Coe back on the show again. So it was great to have Boyer on. And then we had Richard Baldwin as well. So they both gave their memories of Bill. That was a really good show. And then I talked to Red LaRille. Red was the 1960 Mr. America winner. And he was actually the last person to see Bill alive. So after we did the Bill Pearl tribute, Boyer told me you should really try to get Red on the show. So he was a delight to talk to. 86 years old, still running his gym in Louisiana. One of the biggest gyms probably in the country, probably the biggest gym for sure in Louisiana. And Red was a real character. So you want to go back and listen to that one if you haven't. And then probably the highlight of the year for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast was the Rick Wayne interview. I've been trying to get Rick on the show for a couple of years, and we did a three-part interview with Rick. He talked for 3 hours. So that was fantastic. So definitely one of the best interviews I've ever done on this show, because I've always wanted to talk to Rick, and we finally were able to do it. So that was fantastic. So if you guys haven't heard those, I'm sure most of you have, go back and listen to those. And then we had Joe Lavenda on. Joe was the 1962 Mr. America and Mr. Universe winner, and he also won the professional NABBA Mr. Universe the year after that. So Joe is still living in New York. And he was a great, great guest too. Great personality. So it was great to talk to Joe Abenda. And then finally, of course, we had Rich Gaspari on the show. And Rich was talking about this new documentary they're making about his life. And we also talked about his neck surgery and getting older. Rich is going to be 60 next year, like myself. So we're lamenting over the joys of getting older as we stay in the sport and still training and still trying to look good. So it was a good year. So hopefully 2023 will be another great year on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We got, of course, Jerry. We're going to do 1982 and 1992 in review. And I've got a couple other guests who want to come back on the show. So John DiCola called me up a little while back. He said he wants to come on the show too. And we got Roy Callender scheduled for the end of January. I guess Roy is coming out with a new app for his training. So we're going to get him back on the show as well. So stay tuned to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast this year, guys, and we will bring you some more great content. I want to mention a seminar I've got coming up next weekend in Massachusetts, and I was out there this last year in April. It's called Guaranteed Fitness. It's out in Spencer, Massachusetts. So if you guys are interested, if you're in that area and you want to check it out, go to guaranteedfitness.org. So they are having a full day seminar. Lee Haney is going to be there with me, 8-time Mr. Olympia, one of the greatest bodybuilders, if not the greatest bodybuilder of all time. Lee is going to be there giving a seminar, as well as myself. Josh Bryant, who is the number one strength trainer in the world, is going to be there. And Nancy Andrews, who is a 4-time World Women's Natural Bodybuilding Champion. She lives right in that area, so she's going to be there as well. So yeah, check out guaranteedfitness.org if you're in that area. $99 for the whole day. And we are going to be giving seminars. That'll be on January 7th at 10 a.m. out in Massachusetts. So I'm looking forward to that. At the end of the show today, I am going to read two articles that pertain to 1972. And they both come from Muscle Builder magazine. So if you guys were not lucky enough to get some of these old Muscle Builder magazines, or if you don't have them anymore, I'm going to go back in time and read some of these articles. We're going to go back 50 years. So the first one is the July 1973 issue of Muscle Builder magazine. And it's written by Rick Wayne, but it's an interview with Serge Nubre. And it's called The Dark Shadow Over Arnold's Son. And this is where Serge Nubre was basically saying Arnold is finished. After Arnold won the 1972 Olympia, he said he should have beat Arnold. He said Sergio should have beat Arnold. And he said Arnold doesn't have the drive anymore, and he is done. So we're going to read that one first. And then the follow-up article, which was 1 month later in August 1973, Muscle Builder, it says, has success foiled Arnold? And this is another interview by Rick Wayne with Arnold. And Arnold is going to respond to that article from Serge Nubre. So they're both kind of short articles, not too long. So I'm going to read both of them right at the end of our interview with Jerry, where we talk about the year 1972. Not too many emails. I did get an email on Apple Podcast. So if you guys listen to the podcast on Apple, you can leave an interview right there. This one is from T.D. Klein. It came from December 12th. And it says, fascinating interviews. The interviews are great. Whether it's an icon like Rick Wayne or someone before my time that I never heard of, like Joe Abenda. I also enjoy the articles that John reads at the conclusion of the interviews. John is a very relatable, modest guy. Keep up the good work. All right. Thank you, TD. I also got a message from Michael Manavan. And this is interesting because last week, me and Jerry talked about Steve Mihalik. And I read an article at the end of the interview we did with Jerry last week. It was written by Steve Mihalik for Iron Man magazine. And Steve was talking about how he was natural and he did not take drugs. And it was called The Death of Bodybuilding, where he thought that if steroids continue in bodybuilding, it's going to kill the sport. And Jerry and I were kind of laughing about that because Steve Mihalik was notorious for taking a lot of drugs. In fact, at his Mr. America gym in New York, the sign-in pen that you use to sign in at the front desk was a syringe. So, you know, Steve was not shy about all the amount of drugs that he took. And I guess he probably recommended to his clients also that they take a lot of drugs, because the rumor was that there was a lot of guys from his gym were taking a lot of steroids compared to what everybody else was taking back at that time, 50 years ago. But I got this message from Michael and I wanted to read it because I think we may have been wrong. Michael says, hey, John, I just listened to your podcast with Jerry on 1972. As you know, my history of living in Steve's basement for 9 years, I was privy to a lot of personal stories and seeing the public stories adjust with embellishment. One of the things he never wavered on was that he won the 1972 America without drugs. His story was that it wasn't until after the win and a few world tours that he found out through Serge Nubre drugs that they were using in France and his goal for the 1975 Mr. Universe. If I recall, he was 210 pounds on stage at the America and 258 at the Universe, 75 Universe. Am I saying he couldn't have lied to me? No, but I knew him well enough to know when and where he would embellish. And this I'm 99% sure with believing to be true. All right. So we may have been wrong with Steve. He may have been natural. And it sounds like he was for that 72 of Mr. America. And if he was, God, he had a great physique for being without steroids, because he had an awesome physique when he won that 1972 Mr. America. But I didn't realize the weight difference, like 48 pounds heavier for that 75 Universe, which he lost, I believe, to Boyer Coe at that contest. And that was the NAVA Mr. Universe. And then Steve went on to compete as a professional in the IFBB in the late 70s when they were doing all those Grand Prix shows. So If we were wrong, I apologize for that. But Michael set us straight on that one. Oh, I don't also want to mention, I put up the Rick Wayne interview part three on my YouTube channel. So now all three parts are on my YouTube channel, which is under my name, John Hansen. So if you guys are on YouTube and you want to see the interview with Rick video, and where I add a lot of pictures to it, a lot of old pictures of all the guys we're talking about, then check that out on my YouTube channel. And that's under my name, John Hansen. So I got all three parts on there as well. All right, guys, that's all we got. So here is part two of our interview with Jerry Branum, where we talk about the year 1972, and we're going to cover all the IFBB contests, the Mr. Olympia, the Mr. America, the Mr. World, and the Mr. Universe. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have my good friend Jerry Branum here today, and we are continuing our discussion about the contest in the past. We are going to go to talk to about 1972, which was 50 years ago, Jerry. And last time we talked about the AAU Mr. America and the NAVA Mr. Universe from 1972. So today we're going to talk about some of the big IFBB contests from that year, including the Mr. Olympia and the Mr. Universe and the Mr. America. So let's start with the Olympia, because that was the one of the most controversial Mr. Olympias, I think, ever. That was the one in Essen, Germany.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Where, Sergio was in his best shape ever, and Arnold beat him.
Yeah. I think I might have told you this story. Right after that contest in Essen, I spoke to a couple of bodybuilders who competed in that show, you know. And I asked him, I don't think I'd seen the photos yet, because, you know, you had to depend on the magazines.
Yeah, it took months. Yeah.
Yeah. So I asked him, because I had heard Sergio was in exceptional shape. But it's all I heard. So I asked these guys, a couple of them, I can't remember who if you mention the names, I'll remember who they are.
I think one was Zane, right? Frank Zane?
Zane and a couple others. And Columbo, you know, and I asked him if Arnold deserved to win or whether Sergio should have won. And everyone said that Sergio should have won except one person, Franco Columbo. Said that Arnold, you know, beat him legitimately.
Yeah.
But everybody else said that Sergio was in the best shape. And sure enough, when the magazines came out, my opinion was Sergio did edge him out that year. But yeah, there was some extenuating circumstances. For example, the promoter of the show was this guy. What the hell's his name? The guy who ran the German version.
Oh, was it Busick? Albert Busick?
Albert Busick, I believe, was the promoter of the show. I could be wrong about that, but I believe it. And Busick was extremely close to Arnold.
Yeah.
He was at Arnold's wedding.
Right? Yeah. He was a
very close friend of Arnold.
One of his best friends.
Arnold actually worked for him for a while in a gym in Munich.
Yeah.
You know, Arnold told me the story himself. He said that was when I first met Arnold. He said that the gym had a Coca-Cola machine in the middle of the gym. And he says, I didn't work in those days. I said, I said to him, Arnold, what did you do for money? He says, these hookers would give me their money. So I said, Arnold, that makes you a pimp, for crying out loud. He says, hey, I never forced them to. They just liked me, you know. And that's a story you'll never see in print, right?
Right. What did he do to get money? They were just giving him money? He was probably protection for him or something.
Maybe he didn't go into details what he did. Maybe that was it. I don't know. But
yeah,
he said he didn't have to work, you know. But Busick was the promoter. And, you know, so it makes you wonder. I mean, this is Arnold's best friend. And, you know, you wonder that if it was a close contest between Sergio and Arnold,
yeah,
maybe Busick could somehow influence the judges to kind of push the contest over to Arnold's side. Because I think any objective observer, whether you look at, I don't know whether Wayne made films of that contest or not, Wayne Galash, but
there is a film of it, yeah.
Right. Whether you look at the film or the still photography, Sergio, to me, was a clear winner. That he Sergio always had a problem, you know, getting in really ripped up shape, and, you know, where he had a lot of vascularity, where he looked really, let's say, ready. You know what I mean? Where he looked what's that word I'm looking for? Polished.
Yeah.
You know, it always looked like you had a little bit to go, you know, like a little sheen of water. A good example is the 71 America when he lost to Bill Pearl. Now, if you look at the universe, I'm sorry, universe. If you look at the photo, especially when they're standing relaxed, Sergio's as big as Bill Pearl easily.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. But Sergio looks a little smooth standing relaxed. Whereas Bill, he wasn't ripped either, but he was more polished than Sergio. So you can say that Bill Pearl deserved to beat Sergio in that NABBA universe because he was more, you know, in better peak condition, let's say.
Yeah.
And that's the way it was in 72 in Essen. Sergio was in better peak condition than Arnold. Arnold looked great, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, fabulous double arm, that Arnold's double arm bicep was fantastic. But, you know, Sergio, when he did this shot here with the, you know, with the lat spread and
this
here with the arms overhead.
Oh, yeah.
It was just incomparable. You know.
Yeah.
And being in the, I really believe to this day, that was the best shape that Sergio ever got in.
I think everybody agrees with that. Yeah,
so I think Sergio, and was Sergio Bray in that show? I don't remember.
Yeah, he got third.
I mean, I vaguely read Sergio Bray. He was like, if it was a track race, you know how some guys, you ever see a race where they're running around the track? Mm-hmm. Like two guys are like, you know, a mile ahead of the pack. Right. That's the way Sergio and Arnold were to Sergio Bray and the others in the show.
Right. It wasn't
even close.
Yeah.
It was clearly between those two.
Yeah.
I mean, as you know from past talks, I Sergio wasn't a personal favorite of mine as far as a human being.
Right.
But and I always tell people I give him credit as being one of the I separate that from his accomplishments as a bodybuilder. I still think he's one of the greatest bodybuilders of all time. And to this day, this might be a surprising statement to some people, considering when they look at the guys today, I still think that Sergio Oliva was the most genetically gifted bodybuilder in history.
I mean, especially
me, because I did see him in person when he was in a bodybuilding in fairly good condition. And no photo really does the guy justice, you know?
Yeah.
You know? He's the most genetically gifted. And when you get a guy like that who gets in peak condition, he's literally unbeatable. And he should have won that night. That's the bottom line. He should have won.
Well, it was interesting because there was also Zane was in that. And that was Frank Zane's first Olympia. He did it the week after he won that NABBA Universe.
Wow, yeah.
He only got fourth. And then Franco was in it. That was Franco's second because Franco actually did do it in 1969. When Arnold lost to Sergio. So that was his second. Mm-hmm. And then there was another guy from France who I never heard of. His name is Kowadzik or something. I'd never seen him in any show. I don't know how he was in this contest.
Never heard of him either.
He never even won Mr. France.
Wow.
He was third in Mr. France.
How does he get into a Mr. Olympia
contest? I have no idea. But he totally didn't belong there. He didn't have the development. He didn't have. But anyways, he was sick. So With six guys being in the contest, this was the biggest Mr. Olympia they had ever had since 1965, since it started, you know.
Six guys. That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But
I've got the judges' score sheet here, so I don't know if you've ever seen this, Jerry.
No, I never have.
None of the judges were from America.
Ah, there you go.
They were from France, Poland, Germany, Holland, Czech Republic, England.
Yeah.
So no judges from America.
Any of those judges have names we might recognize? Any of that you recognize?
Judge Weimer from Deutschland. So is Deutschland for Germany?
That's Germany. Yeah.
Okay. Dennis Stallard was one of the judges.
Okay, he's from England. I remember him.
Dr. Basinski from CSSR. So was that the Czech Republic?
Yeah.
Van Velden from Holland.
Never heard of him.
Another doctor, Dr. Garby from Deutschland. So he's another German judge.
Right.
And then Salassa from France.
Okay. Well, that last judge explains how that last guy got into it.
Yeah, right.
Just kidding. Turns out that was his uncle. No, I'm just
kidding. Right. Yeah. He definitely had some kind of connection.
Yeah, there you go.
So this is going to be surprising to you, Jerry, but Arnold got 5 first place votes.
Wow.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven judges. He got five first place votes.
So Sergio got two?
Sergio got one. And Serge Nubre got the other one.
Holy Toledo.
Yes.
Sergio Oliva got only one first place vote.
Arnold got five.
Now, how could they possibly explain that? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
So Arnold got, the other two judges gave Arnold third.
Wow.
And one of the judges was from Germany.
Oh, interesting. Wow. So
Sergio got one first place vote from the guy from Germany, and then he got almost all second place votes, but the guy from Poland gave him fourth.
Wow. Wow.
And then Serge Nubre got a first. Well, this is kind of confusing because, okay, yeah, Serge Nubre got one first place vote, and then he got mostly thirds and fourths.
Right.
So Arnold scored 11 points. Sergio had 15, and Nubre got 17.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't even close on the judge's score sheet.
Wow. I don't know how Sergio can only place first on one judge's score.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think at least maybe two or three would, you know, I don't understand what their reasoning was.
But I remember Arnold guest posed at the Mr. USA or something, or the Mr. America, like 2 weeks before the contest. And even in the reports in the contest, they said that Arnold was too smooth, you know.
Yeah.
Wow. And then I read an article where they interviewed Arnold. Serge Nubre, after the contest, said Arnold shouldn't have won. And he said, Arnold's done. He said, Serge said, I'm going to beat him next year. Sergio's going to beat him next year. He's done. He's too complacent. He's not hungry anymore. He's done. So Arnold, they told Arnold like what Serge Nubre said. And Arnold said, he goes, if I would have been a judge, he goes, I would have had Sergio first.
Arnold said that?
Arnold said that, yeah.
Well, Arnold himself chose. So, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah. But Arnold also said, he goes, in Germany or in Europe, he said they like the bigger kind of body. And he goes, I was bigger than Sergio, so I could see why I won. But he goes, if I would have been a judge, he goes, I think Sergio, I would have had Sergio first.
Well, Arnold was taller than Sergio, but I mean, muscle mass wise, I don't think he was that much bigger than Sergio.
No, I don't think so either. But maybe just because he was taller and wide, you know.
He was taller and stuff like that. But
yeah.
I mean, it's not like Sergio was a small guy next to him, you know?
No.
Yeah, so I don't know. That's one of those things that will always be, debated, I guess.
But this was the last contest where Arnold and Sergio competed because Sergio never did another one.
Never did one, yeah.
He was supposed to come back the next year in 73, and I'm sure you heard that story about the one in Tijuana and the International where he challenged Arnold, and then Weider got so pissed that he banned him for life, and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that kind of affected me, because when I tried to interview Sergio twice,
yeah, he hated Weider.
When he found out I was representing Weider, he told me to fuck off, basically.
Yeah. You know?
So he held a grudge, even though it wasn't me that did that to him.
Right. You know? Well, I guess the reason Sergio wanted to do that Mr. International was because those judges were from Mexico. So he figured they're not Weider's judges. You know, he thought that Weider was stacking the panel with his judges so Arnold would win, you know.
Right. I heard that too. Yeah.
Yeah. To this day, that's one of the most controversial.
Yeah. I think most people think that Sergio should have won if you were to question him.
Especially if
they look at the pictures, you know, most people will agree that between those two, Sergio should have won.
Right. Right.
You know.
Anything else you want to say about that contest?
Nothing else, really.
Yeah, we've talked about that many times.
Yeah, other than Essen, I was in Essen myself in the late 80s for that bodybuilding tour, you know, the Grand Prix tour.
Yeah.
Here we go again with Eduardo Coac. There was a pro show being held in Essen. I remember that girl, Anya Langer.
Yeah.
She guest posed. And she was... She posed to this Pussycat song.
I remember when she did that. Yeah, the Pink Panther.
Yeah, and the way she walked, strutted across the stage.
Right, that was perfect for her. Yeah.
It was so sexy and stuff.
Yeah.
She brought the house down.
Yeah.
She literally brought the house down, I remember.
What year was that, Jerry?
This was, I think this would be 87.
Okay, yeah. And Haney won the contest, right?
Right, that's right. And Eduardo, right about the night before the show, again, he says, let's get something to eat. And Essen, if I remember, it looked like a factory town to me. And there wasn't much going on there. So we found this place that looked like a McDonald's. It was a hamburger place. So we went in there, and Eduardo orders a double cheeseburger with French fries and a regular Coke. And believe it or not, I actually wound up, what did I have? I had, I ordered a hamburger, but I ate it. I threw away the bun and ate only the hamburger because I was afraid of the carbs. And I wasn't competing. He was competing. You know? And I said, Eduardo, do you realize how much sodium you just had? He said, it's not going to affect me. Don't worry about it. And he's right. Again, he showed up. No sign of other attention at all in the guy. Wow. He was just a freak. He was just like a pure
That's crazy.
Walking muscle guy. Just a very sweet guy. Just a nice guy.
Yeah.
But that was in Essen also.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the IFBB Mr. America, Mr. World contest, which was held in New York. And I think this was 2 weeks before the Mr. Olympia in Essen. So Arnold and Franco were both guest posing. And Ed Corney won the Mr. America. So this was Ed Corney's first big win. He had been in the IFBB, I think, the year before, and he had done pretty good.
Right.
I think he won his class at the Mr. USA, or might have won the Mr. USA, I think, in 71. But this was his first big overall win in the Mr. America. So he didn't really have much competition. Leon Brown was second to him in the short class. A guy named Roman Austin, who I don't even remember, he won the medium class.
I remember Roman Austin.
You do?
Yeah, he was broad shoulders, small waist, nice physique. Not a big guy, though. I remember him.
Okay. And Charles Fox, who just recently passed away, right, about a year ago, he won the top class.
Charlie Fouts, yeah.
Yeah.
He was living in New Jersey at the time, I believe. Or maybe he was already out in L.A., because I know he's from New Jersey. I'm not sure where he was at that time.
Yeah.
72. I don't know if that was the year that I think it was 72, where Dan Lurie, he held a contest in New York, and he brought out Steve Reeves. He presented an award to Steve Reeves. I think
it was 73.
Oh, 73. Okay, because I was there. I actually...
Oh, you went to that one with Steve Reeves?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think it was held on the same night that they held the
at the Mr. Olympia. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I passed on the Olympia because I wanted to see Steve Reeves in person.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like one of my idols when I big. So I got there, and I sure enough, I was right into the stage. I saw Dan Lurie hand him this, what is it, award or something like that?
They gave him the key to the city, too, they said.
Yeah. I saw
Was it sold out, Jerry? Because the article said it was sold out.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steve Reeves was a big draw, but he had a full. And I was right under the stage. I said, there he is, Hercules himself.
Yeah. Dan Lurie was something, man, wasn't he? Held it on the same night as the Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
In the same city, too, a couple blocks away.
Yeah, but I remember thinking, I said, gee, I got to make a decision. Should I go see the Olympia? Or go see Steve Reeves? I said, God knows, I'll never get to see Steve Reeves again.
Let
me go to this one. So I went to that one instead of the Olympia.
Do you wish now you would have went to the Olympia?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah. Steve Reeves, there's no big deal. He came out,
Yeah, he had a suit on. Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of years later, I was going up to the Weider office when I was doing a little work for Joe Weider. And I was in Fred Hatfield's office, and I see coming up the stairs is Steve Reeves with his wife, So I stepped out of the office, and I went up to Steve Reeves, and I made a joke. I thought it was funny. I said, Steve, I didn't hear your chariot pull up. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. But
I remember Steve Reeves stared at me with the coldest look you can imagine.
Oh, man.
the old expression, if looks could kill?
Yeah.
I mean, he just looked at me and glared at me. I went back to Fred's office. I said, Fred, I told him what happened. I said, I just said to Steve Reeves, I didn't hear a chariot pull up. And he seemed to get mad and said, Fred, had a big cigar. And he says, hey, don't worry about it. Screw him. He goes like. Later on, I went to a USA contest in Vegas. This is the third time I met Reeves. He had come out with a book, and he was autographing at a table. So I went up to him, and I said, "Steve, I said, I've always been an admirer. I said, I think you're one of the great physiques of all time." So he says, "Thank you," and he autographs the book, and that was it. That was the whole conversation. He very clearly didn't want to talk. He made it clear.
Yeah.
Like, keep the line moving, buddy. Come on.
Yeah, right.
So I did. You know.
It was interesting, that interview that Arnold just did with Nick Strength and Power. He was talking about Steve Reeves, and he was saying how, you know, how great he used to look and how he had a small waist, and he was comparing it to today's bodybuilders. Right. But he said, Arnold said, he goes, "I think Steve Reeves was the best bodybuilder of all time."
Arnold said that?
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. Because maybe
he's always like Reg Park, you know?
Yeah. That's really interesting, considering about the Reg Park thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Reeves made a statement himself. I heard him say this. One thing he was really proud of was his waist size never changed.
Wow.
From the time he was a teenager to winning all the contests, all the way to, like, you know, in his late 60s or 70s.
No kidding. Wow.
He says his waist never got bigger.
Even as he got older.
Yes, never got bigger. He says, "I'm more proud of that than anything else." This is what Reeves saying, right? And I'm thinking to myself, well, that explains why Reeves never did much. He didn't do any abdominal work, because he knew that doing abdominal work might put a little muscle on his waist, or maybe possibly he didn't want to take the chance.
Wow.
Well, that's a rarity, to have a guy from the time I was 16 years old to 70 years old, the same waist size.
That's unbelievable. Especially as you get older, because your waist normally just gets bigger. Almost even if you're in shape, you know?
Everybody's does. Everybody.
Yeah.
I remember great John Grimmick, who beat Reeves. One, you know, only man to win the America twice. Towards the end, if you look at photos, he had a pot belly.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not making fun. It just happens to a lot of, you know, it's just something that happens.
Yeah.
So Reeves must have, I don't know how he, I guess it's just a genetic thing.
I don't know.
Waist, you know, he said he had a 28-inch waist, something like, no, 29. Reeves claimed 29-inch waist, which I do believe.
Yeah.
He did have a small weight. All the way to the end. Can you imagine?
No, I can't imagine. That's amazing.
I mean, he's got to be the, I can't think of anyone who did that.
No.
No. So.
Well, this contest we were talking about, this Mr. America, Mr. World, IFBB, was interesting, because remember how they used to always, I know you remember this, Jerry, because you used to go to it. They held it at the Brooklyn Academy of Music every year.
Yeah, many times I went there,
from, like, I think the early 60s all the way up until, I think the last one was 69.
Right.
And from what I read, they kicked them out of there because the bodybuilders were getting oil all over the curtains.
That's
backstage.
True.
Yeah.
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
So in 1970, they had to hold it at the Town Hall, I guess, instead of the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
Right.
And then in 71, the Olympia went over to Paris. And then 72, it was in Germany. So this contest here, this Mr. America, Mr. World, was the first time they had it back at the Brooklyn Academy of Music since 1969. Wow. So that they were able to get back there somehow.
Wow. Yeah.
So in that Mr. America contest, Ed Corney won best arms, best legs, of course, best poser. And Leon Brown won best chest, best back, and most muscular.
Right. Leon died not long ago, recently.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, yeah.
He was an old friend of mine, Leon. Leon was also another, I call him a mutant, because, first of all, he was not a very big guy. He was a little guy. He looked no more than 170 pounds, right?
But
he was pretty muscular, you know, muscular. In fact, I remember when I was competing, Leon asked to look at my legs once, I remember. And I was in really good shape. And my legs were always my best body part, especially my thighs. And they were pretty cut, if I say so myself. And I showed him my thighs. So Leon says, you have better thighs than I do. You know, he goes like that. I said, well, coming from you, Leon, that's a real compliment. You know, because he was a national competitor. I was a nobody.
Yeah.
But anyway, Leon had this thing where he was one of those guys that could eat anything, John, anything. You know what he used to? Do you remember Weider's weight gain formula number five?
Number seven.
It's like pure sugar.
Right.
It's so loaded with carbohydrates that you could give it to a corpse and it would put about 5 pounds on. It was the most fattening thing on earth, right? Leon would get that for free from the Wiener office. They'd give him like cartons of it, and he would constantly drink this crap. And his waist, again, a guy with a tiny waist. Yeah. He had a 28-inch waist, never changed. Yeah. And I used to marvel at that. I said, Leon, how could you drink this stuff without getting fat? He shrugged. I don't know. He says, I guess I have a high metabolism or something. Didn't affect him at all.
Yeah.
Another really sweet, nice guy. Another, you know, just a really super great guy. I can't say enough about
him. Yeah, I heard that about him. Yeah.
I felt so bad when I heard he died, you know?
Well, in 1972, which reminds me of looking at this contest, that was the year that Charles Gaines and George Butler were starting to, you know, get into bodybuilding, and they covered bodybuilding for Sports Illustrated magazine, which was the first time Sports Illustrated magazine ever did anything about bodybuilding.
Oh, yeah.
They covered a contest called the Mr. East Coast, which was held in Holyoke, Massachusetts by Ed Jubenville.
I entered
Leon Brown won that contest.
Right. I actually competed in that Ed Jubenville's contest.
Oh, did you? Okay.
We had a teenage East Coast. I competed, and I didn't win. I got second or third. I don't remember. The guy who won was a guy who wound up going out to the West Coast. I don't know if you remember this guy. That guy named Rick Giafu.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
Rick Giafu unfortunately got into like psychedelic drugs and stuff, and he was sitting in a balcony in California, and he jumped off the balcony, and he wound up
getting jumped. I heard he was paralyzed, but I didn't know he jumped off a balcony.
Jumped off a balcony and landed on his back. He was paralyzed for life after that. But
I didn't know it was because of psychedelic drug. That's I thought he just fell.
Yeah, he took something like LSD and had some bad trip, as they used to say. But the thing is, I remember coming to that show. You know, it was at a little Mountain View. It was like an amusement park almost.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at the guys, you know, and I'm looking at. Remember, I was 16, I think it was. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, this guy was 6'1". And he looked like he weighed 220. I was, 5'11", maybe, if I was lucky, 170. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, I got to compete against this guy? I said, this is like almost not fair. He's like twice my size. And
yeah.
Sure enough, he beat me. But another guy who was in the show, another guy who you might remember, or you know, was Dave Mastorakis.
Yeah, yeah.
Dave was in the show. I don't think I met him at that contest. We became friends years later. But I remember looking at him thinking, this guy could destroy me too. He's a short guy, but he had these deep abs. He had a totally symmetrical physique. He looked terrific. And I remember thinking this, you know, because my training partner, Pete Caputo, he was in the senior contest. I'm thinking maybe Pete will do it. I have no chance.
Yeah.
But luckily I did get second or third to Giafo. I got a little trophy. But that was at Mount Holyoke. I remember that. Yeah.
He was a great competitor as a teenager. I think he won Mr. North America as a teenager.
Were you talking about Giafo?
Giafo, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was, like I said, he was a big guy when before that unfortunate accident. He was about 6'1", big guy, big bone structure. I mean, you know, his bone structure was as big as Arnold's easily.
Wow.
So probably even a little bigger.
And
it just wasn't, you know, didn't have the finish that Arnold had later on. If you look at Arnold, let's say maybe a year or two before he won the first Universe, Giafu would have beat him. You know, Giafu had more body parts. Arnold, you know, a better leg.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Unfortunately, I don't remember much about Giafu. I don't know how much I spoke to him. He seemed like a nice guy, but I don't remember. I remember he trained at Vince's gym, too, when I went out there.
Yeah.
He's also at Vince's gym. Yeah.
So I don't know if you know, they just re-released Pumping Iron, the book.
Did they?
Yeah. It's now available on Amazon. It has a new publisher. I think it's called Creations Publishing. The owner of the publishing company is Rick Newcomb. I interviewed him on my show last year.
Okay. Yeah.
Remember Rick? He has a long history in bodybuilding. He knew Arnold, and he's been a writer for the newspapers, and then he got into the publishing world.
Yeah.
Anyways, they decided to so they have a new foreword on the book from Arnold and a new foreword from Charles Gaines, and they just re-released the book like 50 years later.
Wow. Maybe it'll sell pretty good, you know, because I assume it's been out of print for a while, right?
Yeah, I probably has. Yeah. Or is that 60 years? Let's see. 82, 92, 02, 12. No, 50 years. 50 years.
Yeah, 50 years.
Yeah. But like Rick sent me one. He goes, the one you got is probably falling apart. And it is, you know, I got the one from, I think I bought it in the probably like mid 70s.
Yeah.
So it's all falling apart. So it was great to see the new book, but I thought it would just be great for younger kids who never even heard of Pumping Iron. You know, yeah. All they ever read it. Now they can read it and they can learn about the sport from 50 years ago, you know.
And also it's very well written too.
It's a fantastic book. Yeah.
You know, but
and the pictures we were just talking about, Leon Brown, remember those pictures of his back?
That's right.
That was taken, I think, at Mr. East Coast, if you can believe that. I mean, some of those pictures were the best pictures ever of a bat.
On the original cover of Pumping Iron, wasn't it Ed Corney on the cover?
Yeah, from the universe, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember they had photos in the original Pumping Iron book of when they went, I think it was it Iraq?
Baghdad, Iraq. Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a second.
All these guys, they're showing them being mobbed in the streets there?
Yeah.
That was interesting, yeah. But you want to know what's interesting is that, you know, George Butler passed away a couple of years ago from Parkinson's. His son became a journalist.
Right.
And I don't know if you know this, but he's been writing a series of articles.
Oh, yeah, I've seen him, yeah.
It started right before the Olympia, basically expose of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And Jim Mannion, some of the people, the officials, and some of the practices. The last article I read just the other day involved a female bodybuilder who's basically almost like a coma.
Because yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, she followed the drug program by one of these coaches.
And
and she was eating 890 calories a day.
Yeah.
Doing 2 or 3 hours a day of aerobics.
Yeah, yeah.
That would kill anybody.
I know.
You know, but it's funny that that George Butler's son is the guy writing that stuff.
Right.
I heard him interviewed. He obviously got into it because of his father's involvement with Pumping Iron. You know,
right.
You know, in fact, I saw a photo of Arnold. Was it Arnold or
Franco?
Franco holding him as a child.
Kid, yeah, right.
You know. I mean, it's just funny that when you think about it, his father kind of promoted bodybuilding.
Yeah, they brought it out to the general public. Yeah.
Right. Whereas the son is exposing bodybuilding.
Yeah. You know, and his father's the one who directed Pumping Iron.
Yeah. Yeah. His son is exposing the seamy side of bodybuilding, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. What can I say?
Well, this contest that we're talking about, this was the one where Charles Gaines and George Butler first met Arnold.
Right.
Because they went to the contest. They went to that Mr. East Coast contest. Then they went to this Mr. America contest, probably because Leon was in it.
Yeah.
And then Arnold and Franco were guest posing. So the next morning, they took Arnold out to breakfast. And that was the first time they got to meet him.
Right.
And they said, wow, this guy's going to be a star one day. You know? They were blown away by him.
But isn't there a scene in the movie Pumping Iron where Arnold's back posing it at Holyoke? I remember him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went back there. Was that filmed exclusively for the movie? I don't know.
Well, yeah, they were shooting some reels, I think, in 74 to try to get the idea for the movie. They were trying to get a producer for the movie. And they went to Holyoke, and Arnold was guest posing in 74. And then that one scene in Pumping Iron where they show the amateur contest where Mike Katz is guest posing, I believe that's in Holyoke, right?
Yes.
With the big tent outside and stuff, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. Where the girl's screaming for her husband and things.
Yeah. That's the way it was. I remember that.
Yeah,
I only competed there once, but that's about the way it was.
Right.
It was a big tent. It was kind of an amusement park or something.
Yeah. Exactly.
And Ed Jubenville, the guy who promoted the show, he was a muscle control artist. He would always
I heard that.
He'd always come out first and do this stuff where his muscle would like. You know, move around and he'd roll his abdominals like that, you know. Like he'd do this old style stuff. It was interesting.
Right.
He's the one that got Dave Mastrakis into bodybuilding at Jubenville.
Yeah. Because Dave was from Massachusetts, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about this Mr. World contest held that night, too, because this was a notable contest because Mike Katz beat out Ken Waller.
Wow, that's a,
I think this was the first time. So I guess Ken was trying to get really ripped and he lost muscle. And Mike looked great. Mike was big and hard too. And Mike surprisingly beat out Ken Waller. I guess it was pretty close though, because Ken probably had the better physique, you know, overall.
Especially the legs and stuff. But you know, Mike did have that huge chest, that gigantic chest.
And he was cut too for this contest.
But you know, there you have a question. As I said earlier, in relation to the Essen, we have a guy who has a basically better physique, meaning Ken, who is not at his peak condition, whereas Mike Katz, who has a lesser physique as far as symmetry and muscle shape, but at his absolute peak condition, beating. So that can happen.
Yeah,
you know, that has happened many times at bodybuilding shows. You know,
and Harold Poole was third, Jerry.
Harold Poole, I don't remember that.
Yeah, he came. He made a comeback.
Wow.
And I guess he was big. He just wasn't cut.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Harold, as he got older, he got bulkier and bulkier. You know. He was once known for his muscularity. He's the one that pioneered the most muscular kind.
The crab, right?
He was famous for his definition, but as he got older, for some reason, and I remember reading, it kind of upset me. He was like already over 70 years old, and he was talking about weighing 270 pounds. And I'm thinking, Harold, why are you weighing that much at that age?
Yeah.
And right, about a year later, he died. So,
I don't know. Yeah, he was really heavy when he got older. I remember that.
Yeah, he got really heavy. I just don't understand why. I don't know. I have no idea.
So the short class winner was Elliot Gilchrist from Canada.
I remember him,
He was an older competitor, but really ripped, right?
Very vascular. Extremely vascular. I remember him. I used to see him train up at Mid-City Gym in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And Franklin Green from Trinidad won the medium class.
I remember him too, Good lads. Very good, you know, very, he had that kind of West Indian type of physique, you know. Wide lat spread.
Well, he's from Trinidad, but he lived in New York, didn't he?
Yes, he did. But for some reason, a lot of the guys from the Rick Wayne, I'm sure, could confirm this, but a lot of the guys from the West Indies, Trinidad, and you know, those kind, you know, St. Lucia, his island, what's the other one, Barbados. Had this. There was a guy named Christopher Ford, who, I remember him coming to New York when I was training in Mid City. These guys always had the same type of physique. I mean, they didn't look like twins, but they always had small waists and extremely wide lats, extremely tremendous vitae. Every one of those guys had that.
Great genetics.
I started to notice it. And, like, you know, I remember asking, I don't remember who it was. I asked one of them, I said, how come all you guys have that great V shape and wide lats? He says, I don't know. It must be genetic. We all
Didn't do anything for it.
Didn't do anything special for it. He says, back in the islands, I know that a lot of the guys like to do a lot of chinning movements. So maybe that has something to do with it. That's what he told me. So I don't know.
in the body part awards, let's see. Harold Poole won best arms.
Oh, really? Good. That's
and cool. Then Mike Katz won best chest, best back, and then Waller won best legs and best poser, and Mike Katz won most muscular.
Mike Katz won the most muscular.
Right? Yeah. So that was a. So now they would pick the team to go to the Mr. Universe from this contest. So I think Corny was on the team because he won the Mr. America. Mike Katz was on the team because he won the Mr. World. And then Ken Waller was supposed to be on the team, but then I guess Ken got an injury. He hurt something. I don't know. He pulled something. So then he wasn't part of the universe. So then when they went to the Mr. Universe, which was in Baghdad, Iraq, was the contest that was covered in the book, Pumping Iron, like we just talked about, it was only Ed Corny and it was only Mike Katz. Those were the only two Americans.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. That's the only two that were in the book. I remember now.
Right. So Waller was supposed to be there.
Yeah.
But I guess because of the injury, he was off. He was out.
I remember hearing at that time how just incredibly popular bodybuilding was in the Middle East. You know,
it wasn't
like the United States, where back then it was looked at as kind of like a freak show.
Right.
But in the Middle East, the bodybuilders were very much admired. I mean, they were really they were like movie stars over there.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if it's
still out in the streets, I guess.
I heard that what's his name? What's his name?
Hadi.
Hadi is treated like that.
Yeah.
Really, very admired in his home country. I hope.
Yeah. And Rami was too in Egypt.
Rami,
yeah,
right. That's right. I know Samir was too when he won.
Oh, really? In Lebanon, yeah.
Oh, very much admired in the Arab world. But I mean, they look at it from a different perspective than the Western people do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what I noticed doing all the research, Jerry, was, you know, the IFBB, as we talked about, they kind of copied the Mr. America, Mr. Universe titles from the AAU and NABBA. Right. And if you look back at some of those earlier shows in the Brooklyn Academy of Music, they were kind of small time, you know, like there wasn't that many. They didn't have many international competitors. They had, like you said, a lot of those bodybuilders from the islands would come over, but it wasn't really like a big international contest. But this was the year, I think, 71, maybe a little bit too, but especially 72, it seemed like it was really like an international contest. It was very organized. They had bodybuilders coming from all over, kind of like that NABBA universe. And it was like, I think Ben Weider was really getting it organized. His goal, as we always said, was to get bodybuilding in the Olympics.
True.
And you could tell that's where his direction was going towards, because they really had this thing organized like an international sporting federation, you know?
Well, Ben Weider, at one point, he said that he had 160 nations.
Yeah.
IFBB. And what he'd go all over the world to these different countries.
Right.
You know, that's probably when he started doing it. That probably accounts for all these.
This was probably around that time, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He actually personally visited, you know, he went to sports federations.
Yeah.
All these countries, and he got them to, you know, Ben Weider was a pretty good politician. He knew how to talk.
Yeah. And
he got them to participate in bodybuilding, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's how it started.
Yeah.
You got to give Ben Weider credit for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know,
and it was great that Charles Gaines and George Butler went and covered this contest, because it was such a big event. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, there was a young boy in the audience who was so impressed that he immediately bought a set of weights and started working out. His name was Saddam Hussein. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding with them.
But you know who was in the contest that was a young guy was Mohammed Bakawi.
Oh, really? From Egypt.
He was in third place in the short class.
Yeah. What a great physique he had. And
yeah.
What a pose. Did you ever see him pose?
Oh, yeah. Amazing. Unbelievable.
He looked like a forerunner to Lee Labrada. He reminded me.
Yeah. Well, I think Lee learned a lot from Mohammed. Yeah.
He did that balletic kind of movements, you know, that looked almost like a ballet, you know? I mean, it's the kind of posing where even somebody not into bodybuilding, like let's say a woman or somebody who's not into this stuff, would look at it and still be fascinated by the movements.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They you know, they didn't like grotesque. It was, like I said, balletic. It was very flowing, very nice to look at.
Yeah. You know how old he was, Gary, in this contest?
Bakawi?
Yeah.
I'm going to say about 20.
18.
Oh, my God, 18. Yeah. Holy Toledo.
In third place.
I met him a couple of times. Another nice guy. Very nice guy, Macaulay.
Pierre Vandenstein was second.
Oh, Vandenstein. One of the greatest abs ever. Jeez.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember when he came out to Gold's Gym, you know. He wasn't a big guy, you know. When you see him in the gym wearing like training clothes, he looked like a guy off the street.
I mean, right.
there was no apparent muscle at all.
Real short, right?
Yeah, short guy, but no, I mean, very lean.
Yeah.
No width of the shoulders, no big arms sticking out.
Right. I mean,
it's only when he took off his shirt that you realized, you know, who this guy or what he was with those abs. I mean, he was one of those guys that, you know, like this guy, the Liver King, somebody had commented that he always looked like his abs were out all the time.
Right. I noticed that too.
And you know that. Even the greatest bodybuilders, when they're relaxed, you could see their abs, but they're not really flex looking. They're kind of just the outline.
Right.
You know, barely there. But when they flex, boom, there comes the abs, you know?
Yeah.
This guy has abs all the time.
Right. So
it's a couple of people have said maybe he had that abdominal etching stuff.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Which I tend to believe.
I do too.
Yeah, I never saw a guy who had abs. It looked like they were constantly flexed, even when he was sitting there relaxing.
Yeah.
You know, that's not natural.
The last time I saw that was in that movie 300 when they did the CGI abs.
There you go, right. That was right. CGI abs, exactly. Yeah. But Van Der Steen, his abs was so good, he actually had that.
Wow.
No etching. His abs, I remember him standing there watching Arnold pose at the original goal, and I looked over and I said, holy shit, he's not even flexing his abs. They're out in bold relief like a guy flexing. They were just so ripped, his abs, just ripped.
Now, yeah, he was you'll see him pictures of him in the book Pumping Iron when Arnold's posing his calf. He's standing right behind him.
Right. And that's like one of the occasions I saw. And this guy, very low body fat, needless to say.
I mean,
if you said to me this guy was 4% body fat, I would believe it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he had that kind of no visible fat anywhere on his body.
Yeah.
Nothing in his entire body.
One of them, like you said, he had the most finished physique. I mean, if you look at pictures of him back then, the finish and the definition was amazing.
I really don't think he could have gotten any more cut than he was. He was maximally cut.
Yeah.
He was, in his own way, even more muscular than the guy who died, Andreas Muenzer.
Yeah.
He's considered one of the most cut, most ripped guys ever. Van Der Steen, the difference was that Muenzer, like most bodybuilders, I mean, he was cut all the time, don't get me wrong, but when he stood relaxed, he wasn't quite as ripped. But when he flexed, every striation came out.
Right.
Like this translucent skin.
Yeah.
But standing relaxed, you didn't see it that much.
Yeah.
But Van Der Steen, the difference, standing relaxed, all his veins, every muscle fiber was sticking out like some sort of, I mean, it didn't look like a human being. Like, he looked like he had no body fat at all.
Right, right.
And not a big guy, though.
Yeah.
If he weighed 150, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, because he was so short, too.
Very small guy, yeah.
The guy who won the short class was a guy from Japan named Kenichi Shumitsu, who I never heard of. But I just got this book, Pumping Iron, and I was looking at it again. And they've got some really good pictures from the Mr. Universe. It looks like it was from the prejudging, and they'll show a lineup of guys standing there. And I saw this guy because he's a super thick Japanese guy. It had to be him. It was one of the best. He had one of the best physiques in the whole contest. But it's weird that he never did anything. He never went on after that.
I never heard of him either, to be honest with you.
Yeah, if you look at the book Pumping Iron again, you'll notice him because he's really, for 1972, this guy had a really thick physique.
Yeah, I wonder what happened to him.
See if he did anything else. I don't think he did. Well, he won the Mr. Japan in 1972, and then he competed in the professional Mr. Japan in 1977, but that was it. He never did anything besides that 72 universe.
Did he win the professional contest?
No, I guess they had a professional Mr. Japan, and he went in that.
He didn't win?
The professional Mr. Japan, yeah, but it looks like it was just in Japan.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't like a real professional contest, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right, right. I see.
So then Corny won the medium class. He beat out Janko Rudman from Sweden and Mederic Annette from France. No other really big names there. And then Mike Katz won the tall class, and there was no other big names there either. Baldo Lois from Spain was second. But Winston Roberts was in that. He was sixth.
Who went on to become an IFBB official.
Yeah.
And Winston actually was the mentor of Paul Dillette.
Right. So,
yeah, he was Paul's mentor. In fact, Paul told me after he formed his own federation, which he still has up in Canada,
mm-hmm.
I called him once and he was telling me how disappointed he was. He invited Winston Roberts to attend his premier contest, his first contest that Paul was holding with his own federation.
Yeah.
And Winston turned him down. Because he said that he didn't want to upset the IFBB officials. And, and I said, wait a minute, Paul, isn't Winston long retired as a judge? He doesn't do that anymore. So Paul says, yeah, he is. I said, then why does he give a crap about what the other judges, the IFBB, he's not involved with them anymore.
Right. They can't do anything to him.
And you told me he was like a second father to you.
Oh, man.
Paul says, yeah, he really hurt my feelings, you know?
That's a shame.
Yeah. And Winston, when you see him, I met him many times. He seemed like such the nicest guy. Really, you know, I was very, very surprised when I heard that story. He didn't seem like that kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know?
I got a chance to interview Winston on my show before he passed away. It was a couple months before he passed away, so I'm glad I had a chance to meet him.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a nice guy.
You know. Yeah. But I asked him about the 81 Olympia, and he didn't give me any good answers. How that happened.
He didn't give you any good answers?
No.
Was he a judge?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, that's the thing. He's doing the same thing he did with you that he did with Paul.
Yeah.
He's giving his loyalties to the IFBB. Rather, you know, he doesn't want to upset them for some reason. He feels he needs to be loyal. So rather than say anything, he'd rather evade the question. See?
Yeah.
It's obvious what he's doing there. Yeah.
Yeah, like he said, Franco was the only Mr. Olympia coming back. Yeah. He said Franco was the hardest guy. And then he said Platts, his legs were too big. Yeah. And I wish I would have asked him, well, Franco had no legs. So how can you put Franco ahead of a guy who has legs too big?
And what about Danny Padilla, for crying out loud?
Jeez. Danny, he said his trunks were too loose.
What?
You know, his trunks were kind of baggy.
Yeah. So what?
It was unbelievable. I when I listened to the interview now, I wish I would have grilled him a little harder. You know, I just wanted to hear his opinion, but I wish I would have like asked him some more questions.
So he actually marked down Danny Padilla because his trunks were too loose?
Yeah, right.
You got to be kidding me. Danny Padilla was like physical perfection at that.
He was perfect at that show. I know.
Oh, but I don't care if the guy was wearing a jock strap.
I think he had Dickerson in first.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I think Danny was a clear winner in that show, my personal opinion.
Yeah.
He had no weak points at all. Nothing.
Right.
Great arms, everything, back, you name it.
Right.
But, you know.
So anyways, Ed Corney, of course, went on to win the overall at this contest. And like you said, Jerry, he was on the cover of the book Pumping Iron with his hands over his head.
Yeah.
And that was definitely the best, one of the highlights of his career, for sure, winning that contest.
Yeah. I'm thinking, John, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Ed Corney the very first guy to pose artistically, in other words, with that kind of flow stuff?
I think so, yeah. I mean,
he was basically the grandfather of that type of poetry.
Yeah, he's the one who started that, yeah.
I think they kind of copied off him. I know Ken Keane did. Ken Keane told me he was trying to pattern his posing after Ed Corney.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of guys, you know, saw the reactions that Ed Corney got when he posed, and including McCauley and later on Lee Labrada.
Yeah.
They tried. And honestly, if the guys today should take a lesson from that,
yeah,
they would look up. But, you know, some of these big guys like, you know, Nick Walker and this guy Samson.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can really pose like that, you know.
Samson actually was a pretty good poser. He was trying a lot of different. And Nick Walker, believe it or not, I don't know if you saw his routines, he did a lunging pose.
Oh, did he? I didn't see.
Yeah.
Oh,
I got to give him credit. He was trying some different stuff. And okay. Samson, he put together a pretty good routine with a lot of different poses. In fact, one time he stumbled because he was trying to do this move where he was kneeling down and he had to turn around. But you know, at least he's trying, you know, at least some of these guys were trying to do something, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But yeah. You're right. I mean, Corney was the one who brought a whole new level to it, you know?
Yeah. And even in his later years, he was still doing that type of flow.
Yeah. And he was on the poster for the movie Pumping Iron when it came out a couple years later, 5 years later actually, with the picture that was on the cover of the book.
Right, nice guy Ed Corney too. Very nice. What a nice guy.
And I remember they asked Arnold. They said, "Were you mad that they used Ed Corney's picture for the cover of the movie for the poster of the movie?" And he said, "No." He goes, "I think they should have used this." So.
Yeah. No, I think it was a good choice too.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Oh, and then Ken Waller won the Mr. International, and that was when the Mr. International was held in Tijuana, Mexico, by Eddie Sylvester.
Those ornate trophies.
Yeah, yeah. Those huge trophies. Yeah. So
you remember the story? I had Zane's version when he won.
Yeah.
I had his trophy in my living room for a couple of years, you know.
Boyer Coe told me when he won that thing, he's like, how am I going to get this back home? Because it was like, he said it was like 200 pounds. It was like huge.
No, it was literally a work of art.
Yeah, yeah. I
mean, this is something that was way beyond being just a little crappy trophy, you know?
And you know, the list of the guys who won that show, I don't know how, he must have held it for probably at least 10 years. But I think Arnold won it 1 year. Zane won it 1 year. Franco won it. Ken Waller won it. Well, Sergio won it, but they disqualified him. But Pierre Vandensteen won the amateur that year.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So we're just talking about Pierre Vandensteen. So, yeah, in 72, then Ken Waller won, and he beat out Mike Katz.
Right.
That's interesting. He beat Mike Katz here, but then he lost to Mike Katz at the Mr. World.
Yeah.
Ed Corney won the short class, and Ken Waller won the overall.
Right, yeah. And I think at one of those contests, I think Ken Waller awarded Mike Katz his T-shirt. He gave it to him back. Poor Ken Waller. That was a setup. Did you ever him tell the story?
Yeah, yeah.
It was all BS. It never happened. Right. He never stole Mike Katz's crusher or his T-shirt. It was set up to make, because, you know, in movies, they tell you, like, when you write scripts, you always have to have a conflict of some kind.
Right.
Every story has to have a conflict. So they decided to create a conflict. There are two conflicts in the movie between Lou Ferrigno and Arnold.
Yeah.
And between Ken Waller and Mike Katz. So they told, you know, they kind of filmed, you know, Ken looking over the corner like he's like getting gleeful. Yeah. Like, then Mike Katz is all pissed, you know, confused that he can't find his crusher. And his and it never happened. And Ken Waller explained that it actually got, he got a little annoyed about it because people would actually boo him.
I saw the 77 Olympia the year Pumping Iron came out, and they booed him every time he came on stage. The poor guy, you know?
Yeah, see, and the funny thing was all rigged.
It was all rigged, yeah. Roger Callard told me they filmed that scene where they were throwing the football around.
Yeah.
They filmed that after the movie, after the contest was over.
Right, yeah, I believe that. That was at Santa Monica College, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, but it's kind of silly that Ken Waller, even to this day, people look at him. Anyone who watches Pumping Iron hates Ken Waller.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know.
So I would say the most significant things that happened in 72, Jerry, was, of course, that Mr. Olympia was very controversial.
Yeah.
And then Ed Corney having that historic contest in Baghdad, Iraq, winning the Mr. Universe there. But I would say besides that, I would think another very historic thing that happened was Charles Gaines and George Butler getting involved in the sport. And that's when they started writing the book Pumping Iron. And then they finished it the next year because they covered the 73 Mr. Olympia. And then the book got published a year after that in 74.
Right, right, yeah.
And also Charles Gaines' book Stay Hungry came out in 72 as well.
Yes.
Which had a subplot about bodybuilding, so that was interesting.
That is true. Yeah, no, that was definitely a defining moment, if you want to call it, in bodybuilding, because that led to much greater popularity.
Absolutely.
Before that, it was very obscure.
Yeah.
I mean, it still is to some extent, but you know, that opened it up where people actually got to know what bodybuilding is. And it actually got a lot of people into bodybuilding. I mean, and it showed that some of the bodybuilders have personalities, which is another thing that surprised people. They thought they were the bodybuilders, just big lung kids who just couldn't talk.
Yeah.
Like Arnold joking around and smoking a joint. I mean, they say, oh, these guys are
well, they also introduced Arnold to the general public.
Right, that's right.
Without them, we never would have known about Arnold.
Arnold owes them a lot of, he owes them a lot because they opened the door to his whole career. I think he realizes that too.
Yeah, he does. I just interviewed Charles not too long ago, and he said that Arnold always acknowledges the debt. But Charles said that he goes, I always tell about Arnold. He said it. He goes, I always said it's like me and George walked around a corner and we saw Mount Everest.
Right.
Because nobody knew Mount Everest was there. We saw it, so we introduced everybody to Mount Everest. But Arnold was Mount Everest, and he was going to be a star no matter what. It's just we were the first ones to get the word out about him, you know.
Oh, yeah, no, they were smart enough to pick up on the potential of Arnold.
Yeah, yeah.
They saw that he was not only this super bodybuilder, but he also had this several unique personality characteristics.
Charisma,
that would resonate with the public. You know, they'd say, they'd start to say, hey, this guy, he's pretty funny. I like him. You know what I mean? You know, he's had this what is it called? Where you can make, you know, make fun of yourself, you know, that type of thing.
Self-deprecating, yeah.
Self-deprecating humor, yeah. And they didn't expect that. They thought bodybuilders were all massive narcissists, you know?
Yeah.
It was Arnold, one of the best in the world, making jokes about it, you know? And the funny scenes in Pumping Iron, like when he's eating lunch with Lou Ferrigno and his father.
Yeah.
He takes up the food and his hand is shaking. He says, I'm so afraid. Look at me. I'm shaking. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's trying to psych me out.
Yeah. It was actually funny.
Yeah.
Even if you knew nothing about bodybuilding, you had to get a laugh out of it, you know?
Well, I remember when Arnold used to be on all these talk shows. Remember when they had all those talk shows back then, like Mike Douglas show, Merv Griffin show, and Dinah Shore? Yeah. He used to be on all those, and he was so charming. And of course, Johnny Carson. And, I remember they were all like, oh, we thought bodybuilders were stupid. We didn't think they had no personality. And here's this guy's funny. He's making fun of himself. He's got a good sense of humor, you know? So, yeah, you're right. He was the perfect guy to bring out bodybuilding.
I remember him being on The Dating Game back then. Remember that?
Yeah, show? Yeah. In 1974,
He was even joking on that show, you know?
Right.
I don't think he won the date, but when he walked out, you know how they introduced the guys that didn't win? He walks them
around. No, he was the guy. He was picking the girls.
Oh, he was picking the girls?
Yeah.
Because I remember, for some reason in my mind, I remember one of the girls kind of did a double take when they saw him because he was.
Oh, yeah, but she did.
Because she didn't expect this big, huge guy. So
right.
Like, she didn't expect that.
Right. Yeah. All right, Jerry. Well, I think we covered 1972 pretty good. The next time we talk, we'll talk about 1982, which was 40 years ago. But this was fun going back in history, 50 years. Yeah. In 1972, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners, well, some of them, some of my listeners were around, but a lot of people weren't, you know.
Yeah. Well, they get a little taste of the golden days of bodybuilding.
Right.
Listening to these stories and
absolutely,
you know, knowing these personalities. And when you post this, are you going to, you're going to put photos of these guys, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Because that'll kind of basically illustrate what we're talking about, you know, especially the S in Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
Even guys new to bodybuilding will be able to see Sergio and Arnold that year.
And unlike other shows, our stuff is all based on fact. Right. We've got all the facts.
We don't. You don't depend on Wikipedia, you know.
Right. Because you were actually there at most of these shows.
Yeah. Just, you know, no offense to those other, I just can't watch that stuff.
Yeah.
They're always wrong. You know, they always say stuff that's wrong. And it just irks me. I mean, the average person would not even catch it.
Yeah.
But I just happen to know.
Well, they don't know because they don't know, you know.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's dangerous that they're giving the wrong information out, because then everybody else takes that as the gospel and then that's they screw it out, you know. And then next thing you know, history's being rewritten right before our eyes. Yeah.
See, the way I look at it, you know, you really need to research something a little bit before you flat statements, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless it's something like the stories I tell are what they call anecdotal, then my experiences, you know, you have to basically take my word for it.
Yeah.
All I can say is I don't lie, and everything I tell you is the truth as I saw it, as I experienced it.
Yeah.
But when you're stating facts like Joe Schmo won the Mr. New Jersey in 75,
right,
and then it turns out that he won it in 80, it kills your credibility.
Right.
And it does for me. In other words, if I see a guy do it, I'll say, wait a minute. This guy, he didn't even bother to look up when the guy really won? I'm not listening. He's done. He's fired. He's like Trump would say, you're fired. Yeah. So anyway.
All right, Joe. And I want to mention also your newsletter is AppliedMetabolics.com.
AppliedMetabolics, www.appliedmetabolics.com.
Yeah.
And everything, nutrition, exercise science, supplement science. You know, I'm one of the only guys on the internet that's not associated with a food supplement company.
Yeah, so, right.
You know, I tell the truth. There's no holds barred. You know, I talk about supplements. I tell you which ones are junk, which ones aren't. Plus, you know, it has something, you know, all the years I've been in bodybuilding, which is over 60 years, it's incorporated in Applied Metabolics. So, you know, people can avoid some of the mistakes I made when I was a bodybuilder. I wish I had a publication like this when I was a bodybuilder. We had the bodybuilding magazines.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of it just wasn't that useful. Or right. a lot of it wasn't even truthful. But this thing is 100% truth. I guarantee that. So anyone who really wants to learn about, you know, bodybuilding, health, fitness, nutrition, all the truth is in Applied Metabolics at www.appliedmetabolics.com.
How often does it come out here?
Once a month, on the first of every month.
First of every month. Okay.
Automatically, the first of every month it's out. And it's actually ranges between about 35 up to about 50 pages. Usually averages usually about 40 pages. It's like an ebook every month.
Yeah.
Yeah. I literally work on that like 7 days a week.
Oh, good.
It's only me. You know, I do all the research, all the writing.
How much is it per month, Jer?
$10. That's it.
I know.
$10.
Wow.
Some of these things are three times, four times more money, and they don't even give you as much information.
No way.
I'm not saying they're bad. It's not that they're bad, but a lot of these other publications, they're not written by, you know, I'm a professional writer.
And these people,
you know, a lot of them are academics. They have their PhD. They write like in a medical journal style. It's hard to read.
Yeah.
Whereas my work, my Applied Metabolics, is written in magazine style.
Yeah.
So it's actually written, I know it sounds funny, it's written on about a sixth grade reading level. In other words, it's not like Dick and Jane run up the hill, you know, but it's, in other words, anyone who has about that level of education will be able to understand everything in it. It's, you know what I mean? That's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope a lot more people will join it because it's a great deal. $10.
Yeah.
All right, Jer. Well, thanks for joining me again. And next time we meet, like I said, we'll talk about 1982. Happy holidays to you, Jerry. It was good having you on the show again.
Happy holidays to you, John. And always a pleasure to talk to you. And again, I'll repeat, keep up the good work.
I mean,
I'm a big fan of you, as you probably know. I mean, listening to your shows brings back so many memories to me. It's like going back in a time machine. I love it. And I always learn stuff. I mean, you interview people I know, you know, that I've known, like Borico, some of the other people. I learn stuff every time, you know, because I didn't get into the in-depth conversations.
Yeah.
So to me, it's a real learning experience besides it being fun, to listen and watch.
Yeah.
So please keep up the good work, you know.
That's true. It's like every time I talk to somebody, too, I learn another tidbit or not something I've never heard before. Yeah. Even today, I heard some stuff from you that I never heard before, you know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is what's keeping, you know, the history of bodybuilding alive, which I think is important.
Yeah.
And all these new guys, these young guys, are always talking about how they want to hear about the golden age. I mean, this is the source. If you really want to learn about the great bodybuilders of the past, listen to John Hansen. This is the way to go. Seriously.
All right. Okay, Jerry. Thanks for the plug and thanks
and,
for joining.
And Jeff, you know where to send the check to, right?
I'm kidding. I got your address. It's on its way.
Right. Okay. Take care, John. I'll see you later.
Okay, Jerry. Have a great holiday.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast as we head into the new year, 2023. And thanks again to Jerry for joining us. We will be back with Jerry hopefully next week, where we will talk about the year 1982. So we'll go back 40 years and we will continue our discussion of bodybuilding in review, doing a little history lesson here that we do every year at the end of the year on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I also want to thank our Patreon sponsors. You guys keep the show going. Thank you very much for your donations every month. I can't thank you guys enough. The Patreon donors have grown over the last year. So I really appreciate you guys supporting the show. And I will do my best to have some great content coming this year. And I will get you guys some extra stuff, like some interviews that nobody else will see, little excerpts of the interviews, the extra parts. I'll also send you guys some videos where I'm going to read some more articles from the archives of these old bodybuilding magazines. So I want to give back to you guys who donate to us on Patreon to show my support for you. All right. And so without any further ado, I want to read these two articles here. They're both from Muscle Builder magazine. The first one is from the July 1973 issue of Muscle Builder. Dave Draper is on the cover. And this one was an interview with Serge Nubre from Rick Wayne. And this was right after the 1972 Mr. Olympia, where Serge got third place. It's called The Dark Shadow Over Arnold's Son. From out of nowhere, another dark threat looms on the Mr. Olympia horizon. Looks like Arnold's headed for trouble. Serge Nubre is Olympia mad, and that's bad for Arnold. Arnold is through. He will not defend his Mr. Olympia title in 1973. The way I saw the 1972 contest, Sergio Oliva should have regained the crown, and I would have been satisfied with second place. Arnold deserved no more than third place, and what's more, he knows it. How times have changed. Not so long ago, it was a prowling wildcat of a Schwarzenegger who was making that kind of sacrilegious noise at Sergio Oliva at a time when the Cuban emigre was riding high on the crest of bodybuilding's popularity wave. Our infallible El Supremo. Having tamed the likes of Chuck Sipes and Harold Poole before a million wide, incredulous eyes, and hastened the aging process for Bill Pearl, Larry Scott, Reg Park, and other leading lights of the 60s, Sergio fell victim to the complacency bug and generously allowed himself a break, a little time for relaxation, for resting on his hard-earned laurels. Sergio was wrong. The addictive taste of success had so numbed his brain, so blinded his eyes to the truth, that our hero hardly imagined the shape of things to come. And so when seemingly out of nowhere, a young Lochinvar rode into town one Saturday afternoon some 4 years ago, tan mahogany brown from calculated exposure to the Santa Monica sun, rippling with the kind of muscle that is synonymous with systematic advanced weeder training and breathing hellfire to boot, poor Sergio Oliva was caught flat-footed with his pants down. Little wonder that he retreated like some hung-up recluse into that famous full-length butcher's overcoat. Check out the thrilling story of Big A's first venture into Mr. Olympia territory for mind-refreshing details. Arnold did not stop Sergio that time. However, there were many at the Brooklyn Academy of Music that night who felt they were seeing Sergio Oliva as Mr. Olympia for the last time, that they had borne witness to the passing of a legend. On the other hand, Arnold gained a host of new fans, especially when he sportingly turned around and planted a Russian-style congratulatory kiss smack on either side of the sweating and obviously very relieved Sergio's face. And those of us who with bated breath witnessed the memorable battle, pose down and all, for bodybuilding's top accolade, knew in our hearts, Sergio must have known it too, that the new threat on the Mr. Olympia scene was not to be taken lightly, that he meant business, that he would most certainly be back. It was not long before Arnold Schwarzenegger was making rude noises at the hereto revered Oliva, promising that the beating of his career when next they meet. Arnold told Sergio in issue after issue of Muscle Builder exactly how he proposed to take him apart. "I'll be bigger next time," he warned. "For a change, you'll be facing a man who knows he can wipe you out," threatened the irrepressible Austrian. The psyching out technique has been introduced to bodybuilding contests. The rest is history. Arnold went on to actually implement every threat he ever made to Sergio. Having walked all over Oliva in Columbus, Ohio for the Mr. World title, he proceeded to give a repeat performance before world-respected IFBB judges in New York. Sergio later moaned that the panel had taken away his Mr. Olympia crown in a manner not altogether in keeping with his idea of fair play, only to have Arnold retaliate with a $1,000 challenge. As things turned out, Sergio was to suffer defeat at the Austrian's hands again and again. And now we're back at the beginning. All of a sudden, a new giant has manifested himself into the Mr. Olympia picture. Not nearly as extroverted as Arnold or Sergio, he is nevertheless as well known as Steve Reeves, thanks to his many starring roles in a number of European movies. By now, you must have realized I am referring to none other than Serge Nubre, the son of thunder responsible for the amazing put-down in paragraph one of this feature. A longtime friend, I had the pleasure of seeing the Paris-based handsome Goliath just a month or so after the 1972 Mr. Olympia contest. Serge was in my native St. Lucia for a starring spot in the IFBB Mr. West Indies contest, and as the competitors went through their paces for the judges, we talked of old times in Europe. Then we got into the Mr. Olympia thing. "I scared the pants off Schwarzenegger," he said, flashing a sunshine smile that did not disguise the seriousness of his words. "He will not compete next time. He is finished. Sergio should have won, and Arnold should have been third." If he suspected I might just have considered his story apocryphal, Serge Nubre invited me to call on him in his beachside hotel the following morning to judge his proof. He was still in bed when I arrived at the Halicon Beach Club, the hotel, and I took great pleasure in disturbing his late morning lie-in. Well, when you're pitifully out of shape and your friend turns up sporting an incredible chest and arms that look like legs, your legs, the sadistic urge is indeed difficult to resist, right? Serge didn't seem to mind my indiscretion. He proceeded to fish out some 200 photographs from his traveling case and casually and without a word placed them on the table before me. As I stared incredulously at one particular print, he seemed to read my thoughts. "Look for yourself," he said excitedly. "Even my legs are now better than Arnold's." And as I picked out another picture, "See that back shot? Arnold always said this was his very own, that no one else would dare try it. He showed me how to get into it a day before the Mr. Olympia contest in Germany, but see how much better I look doing it than Arnold?" Incredible. But pictures do not lie. The truth is that judging from the picture Serge Nubre showed me, he appeared more cut, harder, and bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger. In some prints, he even managed to dwarf the gargantuan Oliva. It hardly seemed possible that one man who sat before me, whose pictures I found hard to believe, had been beaten by Franco Colombo a year ago or so earlier in Germany. I mentioned my surprise and Serge burst out laughing. "Ah, yes, Franco," the words rolled lazily off his tongue. "We met in Germany before the Mr. Olympia contest, and I asked him who the competitors would be. He told me Frank Zane was expected to compete, while Arnold, Oliva, and he had definitely made up their minds to do battle. So I told him right then and there that the real fight would be between the three of us, Arnold, Oliva, and me, you understand." Well, when I said that, I noticed the little man staring at me, as if he had not fully understood my words. So I told him again that the title would go to either Arnold, Oliva, or me. And you know what Franco said? Before Nubre could tell me, he had to bring his laughter fit under control. Then he said, "He asked me, how about me then?" So I told him he did not stand a chance against me, but I could tell he did not believe me. Well, I asked him to show me his best pose, you know, the ugly, most muscular pose. And as he was doing it, I whipped out my shirt and I socked my own version to him. I must have blown the little fellow's mind. Honestly, he just stood there open mouth, staring right through me. I knew he got the message quite clearly. Still very serious, Serge Nubre explained that Arnold had had a good, easy run. He's no longer the bodybuilder we knew 5 or 6 years ago, all hungry and thirsting for fame and fortune. He has done well, thanks to much help from Joe Weider, but now he does not have the guts to train as hard as he used to train in the old days. "I can train 18 hours in a day. That's how enthusiastic I am. That's why I know Arnold Schwarzenegger cannot improve further. He's like a boxer who has won too many times. He's rich and he no longer has the urge to fight. He's lost the will to win. He takes his training easy. He does not force out the last rep and he takes longer and longer breaks between sets. I trained with Arnold recently. I tell you now, he's finished as a Mr. Olympia competitor." How like the old Arnold Nubre now sounds. He almost convinced me too, in much the same way that he's convinced himself that Arnold will be a pushover next time. However, knowing Arnold as I do, even living out here in St. Lucia, has somewhat cut me off from international bodybuilding affairs. I believe he will be back raring to conquer new ground. It couldn't have been all that exciting for Arnold, the prospect of facing the same Sergio over and over and over. With Joe Weider never far away, Arnold is far from finished, I think. What's more, if there's one thing guaranteed to get the boy from Graz reaching for his barbell, it's the thought of someone seriously making takeover bids for his domain. Arnold has said it over and over again. "I will retire from competition only when there's no one left to beat." Obviously, this is not yet the case, thanks to Mr. Nubre. All right. And then Arnold's follow-up interview was the next month in Muscle Builder, the August 1973 issue. And the title is called "Has Success Spoiled Arnold?" And it's also written by Rick Wayne. Remember that brash, arrogant 19-year-old bodybuilder from Graz, Austria, who came to America some 5 years ago for the specific purpose of training under the expert eye of Joe Weider? Remember how, shortly after settling into sunny California and Joe Gold's, this young giant confidently announced his intention to replace the then unconquerable Sergio Oliva as bodybuilding's kingpin? And even after having failed on his first attempt to achieve the impossible, remember how our heir presumptuous went on to label American bodybuilders chicken, contemptuously noting, "En passant, that such notables as Larry Scott, Bill Pearl, Dave Draper, and Chester Yorton had chosen enforced retirement rather than face the all-conquering Oliva? Remember? Now forget him. For the man we love to hate, the Arnold Schwarzenegger of pre-1973 vintage, is dead. The Schwarzenegger of today is barely discernible from that of 1968 to 1971. I swear the young fellow has mellowed. His speech, for starters, is conspicuously without the innate arrogance of earlier times. Even his reaction to challenges is no longer predictable. Having related to Arnold the Serge Nubre observation that the Austrian is no longer the hungry for fame go-getter bodybuilder of 1969 who went through hell and high water to take Sergio's Mr. Olympia crown, I brace myself for the typical Schwarzenegger put-down retort. But no, hardly ruffled, the new addition simply smiles an explanation into my tape recorder. If Serge Nubre was referring to my showing at the 1972 Mr. Olympia contest, I suppose I can understand why he arrived at that conclusion. The contest was definitely the hardest I've been through, not because the people who competed, even though they were all in fantastic condition, but because I was simply not as good as I might have been. During the past 10 years, I've experienced many ups and downs in my training. Sometimes I've turned up for contests looking fairly bulky, and at other times I've been hard and defined. In 1969, for example, I was all cut up. A year later, I was a bit smooth. But in 1971, when I appeared in Paris, everyone said I was like a human anatomy chart. Last year, I was again on the smooth side. But I promise you this year will see me in razor-sharp condition. My mind is programmed for cuts. It turns out that shortly after the last Mr. Olympia contest, while on a tour of South Africa, Arnold Schwarzenegger was involved in an accident that slowed him down for a while. As he relates it, I was appearing in this town where no one had thought about mounting up a posing platform for my display. I had to build one for myself in the end. I guess my work couldn't have been all that great, for when I was only halfway through my posing routine, with a sickening roar, the whole darn thing collapsed, leaving me flat on my back with a busted knee, torn cartilage, the kneecap all out of place. Well, the doctors fixed me up, and I was able to continue the two-week tour with a bandage around my damaged area. On my return to the States, I received some first-class attention, and now I can actually do squats with 275 pounds. Will the knee, even after it is healed, allow Arnold to train in the fashion that which he has become accustomed? A concerned look in his eyes, the big man says, I can't say at this stage whether or not I should be able to train as hard as I know I must if I'm able to retain my title this year. I do know that I will have to be in the greatest shape of my career, and I'll do my utmost to achieve that. But getting back to the 1972 contest, everyone was at his very best. Everyone except Franco and Arnold, that is. Sergio Oliva was simply fantastic, bigger and better than in 1968, which means he really was out of this world. Serge Nubre was also in top form, huge and really defined. The trouble with him is that his weak points remain conspicuous. Franco was also in terrific shape, but not quite as sharp as he was in 1971. Like me, he didn't do too well in training. I'll admit, we were lazy, cutting workouts for the most insane reasons, reducing our sets from 25 to 15 per body part and so on. Even our eating was done recklessly without our usual meticulous planning. And was all this new laziness the result of too long a stay at the top, too many easy wins, as Serge Nubre contends? Not the way Arnold sees it. He points out that, quote, I must have a fixed goal in mind when I train, something to inspire me to blast through workouts. It might be a fixed time in which to gain or lose a certain amount of weight. It might be a pre-decided bench press poundage that my training buddy Franco has set his mind on making before me. Anything to set the old adrenaline moving. I had no such incentives last year. As far as I was concerned, there was no real competition. Sergio Oliva had told me the year before that he was through with contests. And with him out of the way, I felt it would be smooth sailing. I did not figure on Nubre entering in such great shape. Had I known, as things later turned out, that I would have faced the biggest test in my career, it would have been a completely different kettle of fish. I would have trained like a madman, as I intend to do this year. As Nubre saw the 1972 Mr. Olympia contest, Sergio Oliva deserved to win the big award. Moreover, that second place should have gone to him, leaving Arnold in third position. Again, the new Schwarzenegger's reaction is surprising. His reply is more like a daddy-to-son explanation. Well, he drawls, bodybuilders are like that. We like to imagine we're in better shape than the next fellow, even when it's obvious to everyone else that we are not. It's so very easy to be blinded by conceit, to find ourselves incapable of honed self-appraisal. No doubt, Nubre's friends told him that he looked good enough to beat me, and naturally, he believed them. I can't say I blame him, however. If he feels that way, well, after all, that's what physique contests are all about, opinion. How else can you explain Franco Colombo being beaten by a man like Chris Dickerson one day and then walking all over the likes of Boyer Coe, who is, in my opinion, is physically superior to Dickerson, the next? So much depends on the judges. Currently, Sergio was great enough in Germany to take the Mr. Olympia title, and let me tell you that had he been awarded the number one spot, I would have been the very first to congratulate him. I'll go further and admit that had I been a judge in Germany, I would have voted in favor of Oliva over me. I've seen many pictures from the contest, and they tell a very interesting story. As far as my pal Franco is concerned, I completely swamped Sergio when we stood relaxed, but he's honest enough to tell me that Sergio was in better contest condition. That's the kind of criticism a real friend makes. But let us not be confused by all this. The judging was fair. The fact is that German judges are very impressed by sheer muscular mass. I had what they wanted, fortunately. In New York, on the other hand, they go for extreme muscularity in addition to massiveness. There, I might very well have lost to Sergio Oliva. I'd like to make it clear here that Nubre never stood a chance of winning in Germany. His faults, little posing ability, lack of proportion, poor back, and so on, even though he was big and very defined, stood against him. His lats, calves, and thighs are particularly poor. Nubre deserves much praise for hitting the form he displayed in Germany, even at his age. But let's face it, Serge has been unable to improve on the areas I mentioned, even after many years of hard training. I'm of the opinion that he has left it too late in the day to do something constructive about his faults. He can't possibly rectify them now. It's refreshing to hear Schwarzenegger admit that at least one of the many criticisms leveled at him by less successful bodybuilders is not without some degree of validity. He allows that I have had an easy time in this sport, but how can that be held against me? I've trained harder than most bodybuilders, and I've missed out on more things than I would care to itemize. But after I deposed of Oliva that first time, the rest was easy. Maybe Nubre will change all that this year. We'll see. Nubre also holds the view that the golden boy is finished, that he has grown soft from living so long on Easy Street. Again, Arnold goes easy on the Frenchman. In a way, I'm responsible for that misconception. I was so utterly depressed in Germany. Even though I retained my title for the third time, I knew I was not at my best. It's important to me that I win convincingly. Had I appeared in my best possible shape, even though the title might have gone to Sergio, I would have been satisfied with myself for having done my best. Remember that night in New York, the first time I competed against Oliva? I lost, but I was so happy knowing that I'd been in my best shape. The fact that the 1972 title could have just as easily have gone to Sergio depressed me to the point that I told Nubre I was through. But now I want all to know that I've recovered my old drive and I'm raring to go. It's anyone's guess, regardless of what the result of the next Mr. Olympia contest turns out to be, how much longer Arnold Schwarzenegger goes on. He admits to continuing mainly for professional reasons. There's talk of a gladiator-type movie starring Arnold and Nubre, and what with the many appearances already lined up, the sport continues to provide Arnold with a sizable income. Countries which he visited last year include Japan, South Africa, Belgium, Austria, Britain, and France. By the time this article appears in print, he will have paid a return to visit to Hawaii, accompanied by his longtime friend Franco Colombo. Arnold promises that should I lose the title this year, I will do my best to regain it before retiring, just as Sergio is planning right now. After that? Well, Arnold has been preparing himself for a life away from the posing platform. He's been attending business administration classes at UCLA these past 2 years, a fact that he has resulted in very good English that the Austrian uses to express himself these days. He sums up, bodybuilding has been very wonderful to me. I've been extremely fortunate in having Joe Weider in my corner these past few years. He's been a source of great inspiration to me. It never entered my mind when I started bodybuilding in Germany that it would lead me to movie parts, worldwide recognition, and so on. I wanted to be the greatest at something, and I think I've satisfied that need. My ego really does not need boosting anymore. Let's see how I make out with my studies. Let it never be said that from here on, Arnold Schwarzenegger has had an easy time, that he is a muscle head, all brawn and no brain. Besides coping with the pressures that go with being the world's number one bodybuilder, Arnold attends classes at UCLA twice daily. Somehow he managed to fit in his bodybuilding sessions. He now trains once, three times a week, and twice a day during the remainder. What, no time for the beach? Says Arnold, I was never a beach bum. I spend about 2 hours in the sun, but only at contest time. There are too many other important things I can do with my time. So a new Arnold Schwarzenegger has emerged. No doubt the analysis can explain the amazing metamorphosis. As far as I'm concerned, it's a case of goodbye, Arnold. Hello, Arnold. It's good knowing you. All right. Two great articles by Rick Wayne. And those are really interesting to hear the viewpoints of Serge Nubre and Arnold Schwarzenegger, especially Arnold, who was so well-spoken and really admitted that he was not at his best in 1972. I've seen the video from Wayne Glash from GMV Productions. If you guys are ever interested, Wayne has got a great video of all of Arnold's top contests from in the 60s when he was in NABBA all the way up until the Olympia. So it's really great stuff. So you want to check that out. But I didn't think Arnold was too bad in 1972. He might have been a little bit smoother. And Sergio, of course, was at his best. But Arnold was taller than Sergio. And, you know, he was a big guy. So I didn't think it was that big of a controversy. But a lot of people feel that definitely Sergio should have won that contest. But like I said, it was refreshing to hear Arnold admit that he would have voted for Sergio if he would have been a judge and that he wasn't at his best. And as we know, history has shown that in 1973, Arnold came back better than ever. He was in incredible shape in 73 and in 74. And Serge Nubre was only in third place in 1973. And Franco got second. So Franco did beat him. And then in 1974, Arnold was even better. And Serge did not compete. And Sergio never competed against Arnold again after that 1972 Olympia. Unfortunately, they never competed again. Sergio was mad at the IFBB and he never went back. And he started competing in the WBBG contest where he was soft and smooth. And they always gave him the title anyways. And then, of course, Sergio finally made his comeback in 1984 at the Mr. Olympia. But that was way past his prime. I think he was close to 50 by that age. And he got eighth place in that contest. So, and of course, we all know what went on with Arnold. He went on to become a famous movie star, one of the most well-known men in the world. And he's now 75. He was 25 years old when that article was done. So that was 50 years ago. So great, great stuff going back in time. All right, everybody. I hope you have a very happy new year. All the best to everybody in 2023. So we'll see you guys next week when we have part one of our interview with Jerry, where we talk about the year 1982. And that'll also be a two-parter. We're going to go back 40 years in time and review the year 1982. But until then, keep training hard. Have a very happy new year. And we'll see you guys next week. Take care.